Welcome to the Let's Talk Project Management podcast, connecting people, wisdom and resources to help elevate the project management industry and the people within it. Our focus is on learning from people rather than textbooks and bringing stories to life in an industry that has traditionally been about data and frameworks. Listen in as we share leading edge information and connect you with some of the best minds in the project management industry and share the secrets behind their success. And now join your host, Melanie Colling.
Okay, welcome to the Let's Talk Project Management podcast. I'm so excited today. We have got the awesome Joanna Rothman, who is the founder and CEO of Rothman Consulting Group, the author of the Pragmatic Manager newsletter. She's also a prolific author, a consultant, and a speaker. So welcome to the podcast, Joanna.
Thank you so much, Melanie. I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. And we were just chatting a little bit before we started this podcast about our time zones, but we've actually done really well on, having a time zone chat that's actually quite, okay for both of us. So I think that's awesome. So thank you so much for joining us today. I'd really love just to start off with a little bit of background of you. So who is Joanna and how did you get into the world of project management?
So I was a software developer and I managed my first project back in 1981, something like that. Before that, in the late 70s, I managed a project that had software, mechanical, and hardware. That's what we did then for these various kinds of products. And my boss introduced me to PERT charts. So I never used a Gantt chart, but I have used PERT charts. And then a few years after that, I was the lead software person for a small project that had another software person and a mechanical engineer. That was a machine vision project. And that was much more about having to manage the customer and their expectations, not the interplay of all the technology. And then I managed projects for Symbolics as the test. I was the lead tester, and my boss was not very, I think I can say this, he was not that well organized, mm-hmm. and it made me crazy. So, if we didn't test this part of the product early enough, we couldn't get to that part. And if we didn't line up the beta testers when we needed them, we would get to beta and nothing would happen. So I said, I'm doing this. I'm just taking this away from you and I'm doing it because I'm good at it and you're not doing what we need. He said, good, be my guest. So, and then I started to manage programs at Symbolics. And then I got into more management. So I started off as a software developer, and I always took the approach that I wanted to make the project or the program easy enough for people to do their job.
I like that definition. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah. Let's sequence the stuff we need to sequence. Let's look for visible progress. Let's look for stuff that makes sense, but let's not do any of the stuff that doesn't make sense.
Love it. Love it. So yeah. What do you see have been the biggest changes looking back on the project management industry?
So when I started to manage projects, we didn't have software tools. We had chalkboards and we drew pictures on them and I used stickies. I actually used stickies for rolling wave planning for the large program. So when I was at Symbolics and I was a program manager, we had, a couple hundred people on the program in various software and mechanical and hardware teams. And we would go into a room about once a month and I would say, what are you guys going to deliver? Right, put stickies up. I don't need you. You're in charge of all your details. I just need to know the deliveries. And then when you guys look at all the deliveries, are you missing anything? Which is why I needed a bunch of people in the room. And a lot of a lot of the developers, this is not like PI planning the way it is now. Mm-hmm. I think that for the 200 people on the program, I might have had a dozen people in the room. Because they would say, we're all languages, we're all operating system, we're all, you know, we know what we want to do. We can send someone. We don't have to be all in the room. And that worked out really well. So we would spend about an hour planning, and then they would deliver. And because we had continuous integration back then. So how many of your listeners are really software people?
We have a mixture. So, you know, hardware, software, yeah, all different backgrounds. So,
yeah. So for those of you who are software people, continuous integration is something I always did because I was too stupid to not do it. And for those of you, because otherwise you write a lot of code and then you realize where you made mistakes. And if you are, if you're a hardware person in the iteration part of the hardware, if you're in construction and you're doing the design part, you iterate all the time. You always leave the paperwork clean, I guess is the best way to call it. So you always integrate all the changes. So it's different when you have a hard good. It's what you can do is different in terms of iteration, but in the design part and in software, you can iterate all the time and leave everything working. So that's what we did. So I would know in a day or so if something was not working, or if the operating system people said, oh yeah, we're going to have this garbage collector all done. and then I would load patches in the morning and say, and the garbage collector would break. You know, I would say, so how are things going over there? They couldn't say we're fine because I saw what they were doing or not doing. So I could help them assess the risks. I could help them figure out what the plan B, the plan C, the plan D. Mm. And that was really my job.
So it's interesting that you started off with sticky notes and we've kind of gone.
Yeah.
You know, full circle, and we're now sticky notes in the Agile methodology, aren't we? So, you know, you've written a book about Agile. So, you know, do you see similarities? Do you see, you know, how that's evolved, or kind of what's the similarities and the differences that you can see?
So back when I was a developer, and even in the first, I think, 30 years of my career, we did not have the urgency to deliver something as fast as we have the urgency now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pace of change has really dramatically changed over the past, certainly since about 2004, 2005. I mean, that's when I think people started to say, oh, we can actually use the internet to deliver our product to our customers. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to box anything. We don't have to do, a bunch of people were still shipping on floppy disks and CDs. But when was the last time you actually installed any product from a CD?
Many people wouldn't know what a CD is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we don't even have them in our computers anymore.
Yeah.
Right? We don't. So I think that the pace of change has really outpaced what I used to do, right, mm-hmm. in the earlier part of my career. So if we had trouble and we had trouble for a couple weeks, that was probably okay. But if we have trouble for a couple weeks now, that's not okay.
Yeah, that's a huge impact to the project, isn't it? A couple of weeks.
Well, this is why most of my clients recently have not been able to use iteration-based approaches to Agile. They really need to use a flow-based mm-hmm. approach to Agile so that they can create a board that makes all kinds of sense for them and see where their bottlenecks are. Because sometimes their bottlenecks change week by week. Mm. Which is kind of frustrating.
Yeah. Lots of change. So what have you seen in, you know, your experience, the biggest mistakes being made in project management?
So I think that the first mistake is that the team does not work as a team. If you have a project of almost any kind, and I'm trying to think if this is different for construction or hardware or software, and I don't think it is. I think that if you have a project, pretty much the people on the project are a team. And if you start to say, Timmy, you do this thing, and Jamie, you do that thing, and Andrea, you do that thing, and Lakshmi, you do this thing, that's not going to work. People have to work together, right? For those of you who are listening, I'm clenching my hands together.
Good visual.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point because, you know, as well as getting the project delivered, it's about making sure the team is working together cohesively to make sure that the project is delivered, isn't it? That's really the role of the project manager.
Yeah. And then I think the next thing is really about technical excellence. If you do not maintain your technical excellence over the course of the work, things come back to bite you. And in software, we call this, some people call it technical debt. That's not actually the real terminology for it. It's unfinished work. If you don't finish your work and kind of clean up after yourself, then every single day, then things just get out of hand. So it was funny when my husband and I moved into this house 6 years ago now, our builder maintained what I would call a pristine build environment. And I don't normally think about builders doing this. They cleaned up the entire site every single day. And when I asked why, right, because wow. I'm curious. And there was always dust from construction, but they would vacuum it up at the end of the day. And so there was only new dust that had fallen down in the morning. And the project manager on site said, if we keep it clean during the building, it's much easier for us to go faster.
Oh.
This is exactly the same thing in software, which is my expertise, right? Mm. So I thought it was fascinating that this construction guy said, if we keep it clean, we can go faster. I see this in every kind of project I'm a part of.
Mm. That's awesome. I love that. That's cool. So what changes in the last 10 years in project management has surprised you the most?
I think that in terms of the biggest surprise that so many people are trying to use an agile approach, whether or not they need it.
Oh, that's interesting.
I've written a bunch of books about agile, right? So why would people not need it? So I think that if you really need to have a much more predictable approach to your projects. And you might need that for any number of reasons. And some projects really lend themselves to a predictable approach. Then why would you use an agile approach? Why would you try and change the culture of the project and by extension, the culture of the organization if you don't need to? So if you don't actually need innovation, don't create an innovation culture. Now, that said, I'm not sure how many organizations don't need innovation, but I find it so irritating and frustrating when I speak with a potential client and they say, oh, yeah, we're doing, you know, choose any agile approach that you like. And then I realize they're using the words. They're not using any of the principles or the meaning behind the words. So they have a stand-up every morning that lasts for an hour, and everyone talks about what they did yesterday. Oh, my God, that's not a stand-up. So,
I think people just, you know, we're using agile like a buzzword and, you know, they're kind of cool. But I love that where you say, you know, choose the approach that suits the project. and also the organization. That's really important, isn't it? Because, you know, if you choose the wrong approach, you're going to be banging your head against the wall at every stage, aren't you? Because you're going to have to get everybody on board each time, and that's going to be so tiring.
Yeah. I mean, there's a saying, right? Don't hit your head against the wall. It hurts your head and the wall doesn't change. Is that it?
Yeah, I like that one.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah.
That's good. So just on that theme, what's been the biggest lesson that you've learned in your project management journey?
Oh, that every single team can succeed. Maybe not the way the managers want them to, but once you get them working as a team, once you explain here's the project vision, or the team generates the project vision and they know their release criteria, what done means, you point them in that direction, you smooth all the obstacles out of the way, they can do it. That I have yet to see a team that is not capable of delivering.
Yeah, love that. It is so important, isn't it, to have the team on board. Is there any particular tools or methods or, you know, tips that you use to, you know, engage your team or get them working? You know, you just mentioned vision there, which I think is really important to, like, you know, share the vision, isn't it? But how else do you kind of get that team on board to all work together as best you can?
So I really like a project charter at the very, when we have a kickoff, right? And the two pieces of the project charter you need are the project vision, where are you going and who are you serving, right? Who is this project for, and what kind of the big picture of the problems it solves for the customers, not enumerating all the requirements, that's not it, but why this project, why now? And then what are the release criteria? What does done mean for this project? And if we have those two things, we probably don't need much more. If we need more, we can figure out what more we need.
I like that, because you're kind of setting the scene for the start, like why was the project, why is it important now? Why are we doing it? And then you're setting the end goal, like, you know, what will it look like when we're done? And then their job really is to fill in the gaps in between, isn't it, as subject matter experts.
Yeah. I mean, I like using rolling wave planning. So there's all kinds of techniques I use, such as rolling wave planning and interim deliverables as often as I think I can get them, right? So for some agile teams, every single day. For some other teams, it might call themselves agile maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks. And for those organizations still wedded to waterfall, at least once a quarter to see visible progress. So, I mean, there are ways of doing this that work for everybody. And then as long as you're willing to replan, that's great.
Love it. Love it. I think you've got to be flexible or agile, don't you? Whatever method you're using, it's just an approach, isn't it? You know, how you can get stuff done and you know, meet your deadlines.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I cannot remember a single project over the last, say, decade where I have not used many approaches to get what I need.
Yeah. You have to be resourceful, don't you? It's like whatever works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. So where do you see project management or the project management profession in 5 years' time?
So I'm not sure if this is really 5 years or longer or shorter. I'm not very good with predictions. But I think that given the pace of change, and we're recording this in August of 2020 when COVID is still circling the globe, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that COVID is accelerating change. And I would be very surprised if more projects do not use agile approaches of some sort or another. I would be very, very surprised. And I think that means that organizations have to really think about changing their cultures and trusting the people to do the jobs. Because that's, I mean, that's kind of been my MO my entire career. Every single person I worked with was smarter than I was. Well, my ego didn't like that. It was true. So why should I not use, in the best sense of use, their brains?
Absolutely. Right?
Why not really make them work is the wrong word, but really ask them to give of themselves and really do a great job. So I think that the more managers understand this and the less threatened they feel, the easier it will be for projects to use a really agile approach. Mm. And while I'm not so excited about all the tools we have, I've been seeing a whole lot of remote tools that are really wonderful lately. So I think that remote work and more agility is kind of where we're going.
It's been interesting, hasn't it, with the whole COVID, change to the way that we work, that, you know, organizations have had to, embrace remote work because that's what we've had to do to stop it a little or slow it down. But you could see the ones that were ready for that and had been doing it previously, and then you saw the ones that were scrambling to say, how can we make this work? And then, you know, you're right, like all the different remote tools, like, you know, Zoom has just gone crazy because that's how everybody is communicating and connecting. And, you know, then yes, there's project management tools that you can collaborate with. You don't need to be in the office with people, you know, to be able to do that. So it's going to be so interesting to see if that continues or whether we go back or there's elements that go back. I don't know.
So I think that when managers realize we don't all need to be in the same office at the same time every single day, that will change some of the financials around what offices look like. And everybody still needs to get together at some point. I mean, this is the longest. Mm. When Mark Hilby and I wrote our From Chaos to Successful Distributed Agile Teams book, we recommended that a team get together at least once a quarter. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's not happening. So we need to get together. We build relationships when we are together. It's much more difficult to build them apart. And we can still figure out how to do that once we can manage the virus. Right. Mm-hmm. So once we get past the virus, but I think that rethinking what work is and realizing it's not about time in the office.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, time with our team, that's very helpful. And when I see teams mob and swarm and really work with each other all the time, they spend about 5.5 or 6 hours together and they're exhausted. They have put in a full day of work. So rethinking what work means,
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Let's wait and see. Watch this space.
Yeah.
So how did you get into writing books? Because how many books have you written now? Like I was looking and I couldn't keep track. There was so many.
So 14 with 3 more final editing. Yeah, so that's I never intended to write books. In fact, if you had said anything to me in 97, I started to write in 1997 because I read Howard Schultz's Guide to Consulting Success. And he said, consultants who write and speak make over $100,000 a year, and consultants who don't write and speak make under $30,000 a year. And I thought, okay, that's an easy decision. So I spoke for the first few years, and then at a software development conference, a magazine editor saw one of my talks, and she said, can you please write a 1,000-word article about that talk? And I thought, okay. So then I got, yeah. So then I got a monthly column for software development. I started to write for other places. And I realized if I wrote, I didn't have to call anybody to get clients. So I really hate cold calling. I don't do it. I write books and I write articles and I blog and I speak and yeah.
Awesome. And what a great way to be able to do that, that fits with what you enjoy doing rather than, you know, cold calling, which is not your thing. So, and all enjoy your wisdom.
Well, and if you don't like it, that's fine. You don't have to take it.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key, isn't it? It's taking the information and then use what you, you know, need to, want to, what resonates with you, et cetera.
Yep.
Absolutely. So on the topic of books or resources or tools, is there any recommendations that you would make to project management professionals, like, you know, particular books that you'd recommend them read or people to follow or, you know, anything like that?
So I wrote two project management books. One is Manage It, Your Guide to Modern Pragmatic Project Management. That was the first one. And that's, if you're not going to use an agile approach, I strongly recommend you read that book because it talks about all the other life cycles. So you have many choices. You don't have to use just waterfall or agile. You have iterative approaches, you have incremental approaches, you can roll your own, right? You can iterate on the design for a little bit, maybe deliver a few features, maybe send it to a customer, wait for some feedback or nudge them for feedback. That's not really an agile approach, right? But a lot of agencies, a lot of custom product developers do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have many, many options for life cycles. And if you're going to use an agile approach, then you should really read my agile project book called Create Your Successful Agile Project. And that's, I think that when I think about how, because I'm totally agnostic for framework, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care. I want people to use what works. And that's what I write about, stuff that works.
Great. Love it. And I love the Pragmatic Manager newsletter because it's like practical, not theory. And, you know, we all live in the real world and it's nice if a project worked in an ideal world that we were taught. But personally, I've never had a project like that.
Me neither. No, it's always, I mean, especially for many agile approaches, you're only supposed to work on one product. Maybe you have production support for that product. Yeah, none of my clients are there.
Yeah.
They're all working on several things at once. And while I might see, I can tell the project team until I'm blue in the face, don't do that. That's not helpful. Right, they're the wrong people to tell. Don't do that. So, I always have. Here's how to defend your project portfolio if you're a project manager. So you're not trying to do everything. And I really think project managers need stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, what advice would you give to people starting out in the project management profession?
Oh. Enjoy it first. and I think that, so I guess the very first thing is practice small,
mm-hmm.
right? Don't try and manage a 20-person project for your very first project. I had a 3-person project for that very first project of mine in the 70s and another 3-person project in the 80s. And then I had half a dozen people and then a dozen people. So don't be afraid to practice on something small. And if your manager gives you something big for your first project, ask people to tell you what their deliverables are going to be every single week. And then make sure you can see the deliverables because then you'll figure out what to do.
Great advice. Love it. And as always, super practical.
That's me.
So what's next for you, Joanna? Like, you've got 3 books in the wings. Any, like, inkling of what they might be about?
Oh, so these are the Modern Management Made Easy triad. So the first book is Manage Yourself. The second book is Lead and Serve Others. And the third book is Lead an Innovative Organization. And I am I have seven principles that are the same for each book, but you adapt the principles given your context, right? So if you're managing yourself, what is the value you bring as a manager? And project managers really need this. One of the best pieces of feedback I ever got as a project manager was my boss came to me one day and he said, "You didn't like the status you got today in that meeting." And I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "I could tell." He said, "You need to make it easy for people to give you bad news." And I thought, oh my God, I really screwed that up. So I sent an email right then and there. I said, "I want you to bring me bad news. I might not like the bad news. I still like you. The earlier you bring me bad news, the more flexibility I have in working with you to fix this or working with a customer or working with somebody. But so bring me the bad news." And that's when I learned about managing myself.
Great advice. And it's so interesting, isn't it? Because getting that feedback on yourself and your style, you know, is at first confronting, but, you know, if you can make the change and make the, you know, change the way that you're doing things and make it more comfortable. I love that, you know, like make it easier, but the more that you bring it to me earlier, I thought you were going to say the more I will like you, but you didn't.
No, because I mean, I still like everybody equally, right? Or pretty much equally. But I really, the earlier, small problems are very easy to solve, or at least easy to bring to other people and say, we have this eventual risk here. But when it's a big problem and it's late, oh, those are bad. Mm. Those kill you. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want big, late problems.
Yeah. And I think we've all seen different project managers with different styles. And that's one of the things that I talk to project managers early on in their careers, like know yourself, know your style and embrace that and, you know, use that to your advantage because everybody will manage a project differently. I used to manage projects through people. So I would just make sure I had the right people on the team and I would support them to deliver what I needed them to deliver. That was my style, worked for me. But you've all got to find your own style and your own rhythm to make yourself successful, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's been so lovely speaking with you, Joanna. I could speak for ages, you know, on this topic and to you, but we should wrap it up for our poor listeners. But is there any final parting words or words of advice or anything that you wanted to add for our listeners today?
So I think the one thing I would add is something that you and I have exhibited during this conversation. We have laughed together.
Yes.
And yeah, and I think that the more we can keep our sense of humor, the more we can laugh at some of the ridiculous situations we see in our organizations. Yes, it's serious, but no, we gotta laugh at it so we can then figure out what the next step is. So it's not that you shouldn't take things seriously, but you should find the little piece of absurdity and say, yeah, I'm going to hang my hat on that one and laugh and then figure out what to do.
Love that, because that then sends, you know, a different vibe, doesn't it, to the team and the people around you. And I think, you know, like you said, your first piece of advice to anyone new is enjoy it. It's like, just have a bit of fun. Like, you know, don't have to be too serious all the time. There's time and a place for that. But, you know, you do have to enjoy what you do. So I have so enjoyed speaking to you. And just learning from you because, you know, I know that you've written so many books and, you know, I've had a look on your LinkedIn profile and you've just got such a lot to share with the project management profession. So I really thank you for spending a little bit of time with me today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Joanna.
You've been listening to the Let's Talk Project Management podcast with Melanie Colling. Are there subjects or topics you would like me to cover or people you would like me to interview on the podcast?
let me know over at letstalkproject.management. The Let's Talk Project Management podcast is proud to be part of the Experts On Air podcast network.